All right, we'll say good morning. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us today. We are going to begin. Today's daf is Kuf Mem Tes 149. We are picking up on Kuf Mem Ches 148b. Last two lines on the daf Amar Av Sheshet. So we'll say our shir this morning is dedicated by Yaakov Ben Zakein and his Chusav Refua Shalema for Chana Perel Bas Rechel. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, Chana Perel will have a complete and enduring refuah. Shkoyach Yaakov. Okay, so let's begin. Last two lines. Amar Av Sheshes. Yitol v'yiskes. Remember again, we're talking about over here the different cases regarding the different Lashonos for a Shchiv Meira. Right? The different Lashonos, ultimately, again, that a Shchiv Meira is able to say in order to go ahead and convey property to someone else. So if Sheshes says, what happens if the Shchiv Meira says, Yitol, so-and-so should take the property. Yiske, so-and-so should go ahead and acquire the property. Yachzik, so-and-so should take hold of the property. Yikne, so-and-so should acquire the property. Kulon lashon matanei. I will say all of these are lashonos of matana, and therefore will work to go ahead and convey property. Take a look at the Rashbam. Three lines up from the bottom. Amar of Sheshes. Shchiv meira she'amar yiske ploni b'nechasai. O yita o yachzik o yikne. Kulon lashon matana. V'kana. The lashon matana ba'ina kidamina le'el. Yidar. The point over here is in these cases, I just want to point out, the Shchiv Meira is using one of these Lashonos, which is a Lashona of Matana, but is a shortened type of Lashon, is a shortened type of expression. So the Rav Sheshes is paskening that since all of these words convey, or I should say all of these words have a meaning of Matana, therefore ultimately, again, they work for the conveyance of Shchiv Meira property. The Masnisa Tanar, also we learned, Af Yachsin V'yaras Bera'i L'yarsho. Both say so too if the Shchiv Meira uses a lashon of Yachsin. So Yachsin and Yoras are lashonos of Yerusha, inherit. These lashonos ultimately work to convey property to someone who is a potential heir. And this represents the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhi, and this represents the view of Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhi. Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhi was the one who said that a person is permitted to go ahead and give all of their property to one particular person. In other words, I can go ahead and give all of my property to one of my sons, as long as the person, and even though I'm going to cause the rest of my sons to lose out, leaving aside the Bechar. The Bechar has to get his Pishnayim. But I can go ahead and give all of my property to one of the heirs, as long as Lemaisa, again, it's somebody who's fit to inherit me. So the Gemara suggests that Kurt Rabbi Yochanan ben Berokhi, if a Shchiv Meira uses a Lashon of Yerusha to convey a gift to someone who is a potential inheritor, that will work as well. Ibailu, Slimara Sakasha, top of Kuf Memtes, Yehanebahem, Mahu. But say, let's say the Shchiv Meira goes ahead and says, this property is for Reuven Yehanebahin to go ahead and get benefit from it. So what does that lashon mean? Mahu. Dinehave kulu matana kamar. Is the Shchiv Meira saying that this entire property should be a matana, should be a gift to the particular individual? O dilma lishani minayhu midi kamar. Or maybe the Shchiv Meira is saying, no, that let Reuven, we'll call him Reuven, let Reuven go ahead and enjoy the property. So we'll say, he's not giving a matna Shchiv Meira, he's not giving a gift, rather he's giving Reuven the rights of usage, and those rights of usage occur now. So that's the Shaila, Yehanabahan, is that a conveyance of a gift, or ultimately again, is that a right of usage? Next, Yira'ebahan. These are interesting Lashonos. So Yira'ebahan means, Shchiv Meira says, let Ploni be seen in my property. Mahu. What does that mean? Again, is that a lashon ultimately again of conveyance, of gift, or is that a lashon of maybe hana, of usage? Ya'amod bahen. Let Ploni stand in my property. Right? What is that statement? Yishan bahen. Let Ploni lean on my property. So we'll say, these are all the types of lashonos that on one hand again could go ahead and set, could be a conveyance, could be a gift, but could also what? Could also really highlight just some kind of usage. So what are we doing in all these cases? Teku. So again, we're not sure exactly what these Lashonos mean, and therefore the Gemara says Teku. Fine. Iboilu. Well, so now the Gemara has another kasha, and this is very, very interesting. Very interesting. Exceptionally interesting. Iboilu. Machar kol nechasav nahu. We'll say, up until now, when we were dealing with the shchimira, we were dealing with the following situation. Someone is giving away all of their property. So remember again, the construct that we have created is the following. Person's giving away all of their property and they're on their deathbed. So we'll say, the way we interpret that gift is how? Right? It's a condition. Essentially, it's a conditional gift that a person thinks they're going to die. Therefore, they're giving you all their property because, again, either because they don't want their property to be governed by the laws of Yerusha, they want to be able to give who they want, whatever it is. But what's also implicit then in that gift is what is that? Should the shchimera recover, then what happens? You know, it creates a little bit of a conflict of interest. Do you daven for the shchimera? Don't daven for the shchimera, right? So again, of course, I wanted to have a refuah shlema, but I kind of like this. You know, I like this field also. So the idea over here is it's understood that it's a conditional gift. That shchimera gets better, he gets back the property because it's understood that his mindset was he's giving away his property because he's dying. What happens, I will say, if he sold his field? Let's say again, he's not gifting anything. He sold all of his property. Now it's clear he's selling off his estate. Same idea. It appears that he's selling off his estate because he's dying. So Rabbi says, so what's the shayla? Machar kol nechasav mahu. What happens if he sells off his entire estate? And then what happens? He recovers. What's this fascinating case? What's the status of that sale? So Rabbi says, by the way, I'll just tell you something. You know, like, Tosis and Ksuvis brought down a parallel case to this. Again, Lahavdil, because it's a more positive case. Remember again, Tosis brings down the case when Tosis was talking about Rabbi Baruch in terms of making Aliyat Eretz Yisrael. So Tosis brings down the case of where somebody goes ahead and sells their home. By the way, this is Lamaisa. This does happen. Person sells their home because they're making Aliyah. And then what happens? Their plans fall through. So do they have the right to go ahead and renege on a sale like that? So actually, Tosfos already brings up that case. I'm just pointing out, here's a situation where a person is disposing of their estate. It appears because they are dying, but Lamaisa now, Baruch Hashem, they make a recovery. Can they void the sale or not? Mahu. Amrav Yehuda Marav. Im Amad Enochozer. So this Rabbi Yehuda says, name of Rav. Nope. Halacha Lamaisa. Even if you get better, you cannot void the sale. V'zibnin am Rav Yehuda Marav im Amad Choser. So Rav Yehuda says the name of Rav, that Allah Lamaisa, you can't void the sale except when you can. Okay, good. So literally translated, you have Rav Yehuda says the name of Rav, you can't void the sale. But sometimes Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav that if the Shchimera recovers, he can void the sale. Which will say, it's another way of saying the answer is sometimes yes, you can void the sale, sometimes no, you can't void the sale. So how do you know when? Velopli, you will say, the Gemara says this, these are not contradictory statements. This is fascinating. Ha de isnehu luzuze be'inayu, ha de parinhu bechovo. You will say, everything depends on where the proceeds of the sale are currently. If the look at the Rashbam for just a moment. If the Shchimira still has the money, in other words, he sold off his properties and he still has the money. So Lemaisa, again, Lemaisa, if the monies are still intact, that shows, the fact that he held on to the money shows that his intention was what? That in the event that he gets better, he's going to return the funds and he's going to get back his property. Masha'en came, deparinu b'chove, Rashi says, if he took the monies, the proceeds from the sale, and he paid off his debts, then what Rabbo is saying, then even if he gets better, the sale is not reversed. Because in that case, it's clear that why did he sell off the properties? Rabbo say, you know, again, it's an important thing. It's an important thing in general for a person to pay off their debts, but important, especially for the neshama, that all debts are paid off. So if you see that a guy is liquidating his estate and he's using the monies to pay off his debts, so then the ma'isa again, those sales are ultimately not voided. So we'll say, so quite fast, and this halacha l'ma'isa. Now, of course, this becomes a bit more complicated because under a general circumstance of a gift of a shchimira, when does that gift transfer? Upon the death of the shchimira. Obviously, in a case of a sale, That's sell sikh based now. So meaning, even if the shchimira, let's say, sells off the property, puts the money in the account, so the money is there, and then Baruch Hashem has the refuah shleima, he wants to go back and he wants to avoid the sales, that's fine. But if someone's been utilizing the property or made improvements to the property or the property depreciated, obviously, it's not as simple as the reversal of a gift. But la maisa, the point over here is that the Rebbe is asking him of Rab that if the money is still there, it's good. The Shchimira's intent was that if I get better, I'm going to give back the money, give back my property. But if the money has been used up, by the way, paying debts is just one example. The point of who the name of Rav is that what? The money's no longer there. If the money's no longer there, then it's good. That's the Shchimira, was that the sale should stand even if he recovers. Ibailo, what's another kasha? Shchimira shahoda mahu. Both said this is very interesting. What happens if a Shchimira went ahead and admitted that property belongs to someone else? Shchimira has property in his estate, and on his deathbed he says, this property, it doesn't have to be all the property, some of this property, this field is not mine. It's not mine. It belongs to Reuven. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Third wide line from the top. Ibailu Shchimira Shahoda, Va'amar Bechalyo, Sada Umaos Halalu Shalplonihin. So Shchimira on his deathbed says, this money or this field, it belongs to Ploni. Even though up until this point in time, we knew this property and this money to be the possession ultimately again of the Shchid Mira, listen to this. So it could be, why would someone say this? Meaning, why would someone make a statement like this? The Rashbam says that he might be saying on his deathbed that certain property doesn't belong to him in order to make it look like he owns less property, in order to make it look like he's less wealthy than he actually is. In other words, we'll say that one of the things that sometimes a person is permitted to go ahead and change the truth a little bit about is their personal wealth. If I'm wealthy, I don't necessarily have to be totally forthcoming and honest about the extent of my wealth. Again, Dimash Shah brings down because of Ayin Chara, different things like that. So it could be that if there are other people around, and the Shchimira says, you know what, that field's not mine, or that money doesn't belong to me. So how do we interpret that statement? Is that his way of kind of deflecting a little bit, that just trying to downplay the amount of wealth he has? Or do we say that Kevan da Odi Odi? Do we say that no? Once he makes a statement that this field belongs to Reuven, this money belongs to Reuven, then what? It belongs to them. We'll say, just so you understand, one of the kinyonim we have, and the truth is, we do this, it's actually one of the kinyonim that, interestingly enough, works by a non-Jew as well, which is what's called a kinyon odisa. Kinyon odisa means, I admit that something belongs to you, right? So for example, when we sell the chametz to the non-Jew, so one of the things that we do is we do an odisa. I admit that the chametz belongs to the Gentile, belongs to the non-Jew. So I'll say, so the shaila is over here, is this an odisa? Is this a form of ultimately conveyance? It's conveyance through admission. So how do we understand this statement? So also listen to this. The Gemara tells the Maisa. Tashma, the Isser Giyura, Aval a tracer alfei zuzi beirava. We'll say Isser the convert, had 12,000 silver pieces that he used to store in the house of Rava. So right, he used to store it by Rava. Now we'll say, so just to understand over here, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. The Isser, who Isser Giura. So we'll say this man Isser was a ger. It is an interesting story. Sheba al Rochel bas Mar Shmuel. Kodem shenis gaya vinis abra himenu bigius. Supposed to listen to this. So this guy Isser, before he converted, was not a very good person. He kidnapped the daughter of Shmuel, right? A young woman by the name of Rachel. He violated her. She became pregnant. Then what happens? Besoch kach nisgaya. She has hashba on him, and ultimately, again, he converts. He converts, and what happens? So I'm sorry. Ubisokach nisgayer v'acharkach nolad Rav Mari. So we'll say. So they have a child together. He converts, by the way. They marry, and they have a child together. That child who was conceived when Isser was a Gentile, but yet by the time he was born, Isser was already Jewish. So it's what's called Horaso shelo b'kdusha leidaso b'kdusha. His conception was when his father ultimately again was not Jewish, but his birth was when his father was Jewish. So what happens? V'hi mibnos Shmuel shenishbu kidisa b'ksuf. So Rabbi says, listen to this. So this is this relationship between Isser and Rav Mari. This is why Rav Mari is always known as Rav Mari bar Rochel. Right, Rav Mari is known by his father's name, is known by his mother's name, not known by his father's name. But yet, again, so Isser is Rav Mari's biological father, but of course, halachically, there is no connection between the two of them. So watch this. So Isser has a lot of money. Isser Baruch Hashem has 12,000 silver pieces that he deposited in the house of Rava. So what happens? So the Gemara says, "Mar Rav Ashi, I'm sorry. So how will they trace also this? Be Rava. Mar Rav Mori Berei. Rav Mori Berei. So Rav Mori, the son of Isser, Horasov Shelo B'Kedusha V'Leidosa B'Kedusha. So ultimately, again, he literally his conception was without holiness, but his birth was in holiness, which meant that he was when he was conceived, his father was not Jewish, but by the time he was born, his father was Jewish. So what happens? So Ubei Rav Hava. So at this point in time, this has nothing to do with the story, but Rav Mori was learning in the yeshiva of Rav. Fine. So what happens? Isser is a shchiv mira. Isser is a shchiv mira. Amar Rava. Rava said, Heichi nikninhu Rav Mari lahani zuzi. So we'll say, so here's the interesting part. So this story is quite an intriguing one. So we'll say, so Rava feels that he's about to get this money. Now why is he about to get this money? Because I will say, remember, Isser is a ger. Isser is a ger. Isser is going to die, and he's going to die without what? Without Yarshim. What's the halacha of a ger who dies without Yarshim? The nechasim become hefker. So now again, they will happen to become hefker while they're in the house of Rava. So Rava stands to inherit a significant fortune. The only thing that could potentially get in Rava's way of inheriting the significant fortune is Rav Mari. So now Rava's saying, well, let's analyze this. Meaning, how would Isser convey this money to Rav Mari? So the Gemara says, Heichi nikninhu Rav Mari lahani zuzi. How ultimately, again, would Rav Mari acquire this money from his biological father, Isser? Ibi Yerusha, if you want to say it's through Yerusha, lab Yerushu, lab bar Yerushu. We'll say that's not true because remember, Rav Mari is not a Yoresh to Isser for one simple reason. Even though Isser is his biological father, he is not his halachic father. Ibi Matana, if you want to say ultimately again that Isser has the ability to convey it to Rav Mari through a Matna Shchidmira, that can't be why, because Matna Shchidmira Kirusha Shavya. Remember again, we learned just in yesterday's daf that the Matana of a Shchidmira is modeled after Yerusha. So whatever doesn't work by Yerusha, technically speaking, can't work by Matna Shchemira as well. Therefore, because ultimately, again, so Isser is not shaykh to the laws of Yerusha, because he has no Yarshim, therefore he lacks the capacity and ability, ultimately, to give a Matna Shchemira. So the Gemara says, Kol Eicha de Isse b'Yerusha, Isse b'Matana. Kol Eicha de Lasse b'Yerusha, Lasse b'Matana. Again, the way that we'll say the laws of Shchemira work is Shchemira is an appendage, is a concept, is a derivative of Yerusha. If you are subject to the laws of Yerusha, then Lamaiskin, you could avail yourself of Matna Shchimira. If at the end of the day you are not subject to the laws of Yerusha, then you cannot avail yourself of Matnas Shchimira.
Correct.
This is Rabbi. This has to be that Isser is the last surviving member of his family. That is correct. Meaning his wife died, he has no other children besides Rav Mari. So the Imago is weiter. Ibn Meshicha, less Nugabe. So if at the end of the day, Rav Mari is going to try to acquire this money through Meshicha, that won't work. Why? Because he doesn't have the money by him. Iba Chalipin, if he's going to try to acquire it by Chalipin, that doesn't work. Also, this takes us back to our Bab Mesia days. Ein Matbea Nikna Bechalipin, as we learned in Hazov. Right? Ultimately, again, coins, money, cannot be acquired through Chalipin. I Agav Karka, if you want to say that ultimately, again, so Isser could convey this money to Rav Mari Agav Karka. Well, remember again, we learned this Agav Karka, that if you acquire land, you could acquire metaltalin. And we even took this a step further. That's what? That even if that metaltalin is not siburin, even if that metaltalin is not on top of the actual land, it doesn't matter. Just by virtue of acquiring land, you could acquire metaltalin elsewhere. That won't work either. Why? Lesle Ara. Because Rabosa Isser has no land. Meaning apparently the only wealth that Isser possessed were these 12,000 silver pieces, which is quite significant. So we'll say, if you want to say that ultimately again, the Mashmash, when we learned this yesterday as well, which is what? One of the interesting, what we call Mil Sabalo Taimos, one of the interesting rabbinic laws that is modeled after the Halacha Moshe Misinai, is what's called Ma'amad Shlashtan. Ma'amad Shlashtan means I could convey money to someone in the presence of three people. Now those three people are both, usually are the borrower, the lender, and the intended recipient. So again, technically speaking, one of the ways in which Isser could convey the money to Rav Mari is how, is he could go, if Rav Mari's there, if Isser's there, Rav Mari's there, and Rava are there, then ultimately, again, so that could be how Isser could transfer the money ultimately to his biological son, Isser could transfer the money to his biological son, Rav Mari. See, if you want to say Ma'amad Shlashtan, listen to this. Ishalichli, lo azilna. So Rav has said, I'm not showing up to that, right? I'm just not going to show up to the Ma'amad Shlashtan. So maskif la Rav Ikabri Rav Amir. So we'll say, so again, this is a conversation that we now both say, now what Rava's motivations are, right? What Rava's motivations are interesting, which is, we'll say, so it's quite possible that again, that remember, obviously, if Rav, see, what's the question you have to ask yourself in this story? What's the question you have to ask yourself? At the end of the day, you do have Isser depositing this money with Rava and not with Rav Mari. Not with Rav Mari, which again, it's just an interesting reality over him. Meaning, Isser has a biological son, yet he's choosing not to deposit that money with him. He's choosing to deposit that money with Rava. Why? I don't know. So let's say, so again, the point over here is you see Rava obviously taking an interest in this significant small fortune and not wanting it ultimately to be conveyed to Rav Mari. So, you know, the Maharsha has an interesting idea. The Maharsha says that Rava's interest in all of this was he wanted to acquire the gift. His intention was to give it to Rav Mari, but he wanted to be able to do it b'toras tzedakah. See, he wanted to acquire title over the gift. He wanted a tax write-off, I don't know. He wanted to acquire title to the gift, and then ultimately, again, convey it to the biological son, convey it to Rav Mari afterwards. That says the Maharsha was his kavana. Okay, so says the Gemara. Maskif l'ratika b'rid Ravami. Amai. I don't understand. There is a simple mechanism through which Isser could convey the ownership of the money to Rav Mari. How? Velodi Isser Dalin Zuzi Rav Mari Ninu Velik Ninu Ba'odisa. Let Isser go ahead and literally admit. Let him make a declaration, a declarative transfer. Right? Let him go ahead and make a declarative statement. I hereby declare this money belongs to Rav Mari, and through that Odisa, let the money transfer hands. Adahachi, nothing odisemi bei Isser. We'll say, sure enough, again, as they're talking, what happens? Word gets out that Isser from his deathbed has made this odisa, has made this declarative statement that he hereby conveys his money to Rav Mari. Ikbid Rava. Rava got upset. Amar kamagamri ta'anasa le'inchi umaf sedili. Somebody's teaching. Isser, what to do, right? Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Adahachi v'achi nafek odisa. He says, mitok shnamra beis ha-medrash, yatzakol, filimdi oliton kein. So after this was being discussed in the beis ha-medrash, someone went over, ultimately again, to Isser, taught him to do this, and he made the declarative statement that the money belongs to his son, to Rav Mari, and sure enough, the money was transferred. Rava got upset. Kamagamri ta'anasla inshim umafsidili. People are teaching other people what to say, and ultimately causing me a loss. So we'll say, you see over here, right? You see over here that halacha lemaisa again, odisa works by shchinira. That the shchinira makes a declarative statement. This property belongs to Ploni, that ultimately again is a bona fide mechanism of property transfer, and will allow the shchinira's property to go ahead and transfer over to the intended party. Fine. Kuf Mem Tesimud Beis, 149b. Shir Karka Kol Shur. Rabosei, listen to this. So remember again, what's understood in the Matna Shchemira, Rabosei, is it's only called the Matna Shchemira if a person goes ahead and gives away everything. If a person doesn't give away everything, but they retain something for themselves, then halacha l'maisa, that is not called a matna shchimira. Now both say, so if it's not called a matna shchimira, what is it called? What is it called? A stam matana. Which Rabbi Osei means that at the end of the day, whether the Shchimira dies or whether the Shchimira recovers, halacha l'maisa, again, he does not get the gift back. So Rabbi Osei, so shir karka kol shu matanasa matana, matanasa kayama. So Rabbi Osei, if the Shchimira withholds some property for himself, then l'maisa, again, his matana is a bona fide matana. Even if he recovers, the property remains with the intended with the recipient. The kama kol shu, so how much is kol shu? In other words, so this is Rabbi Osei, is a very ambiguous statement. If the Shchimira retains even a small amount of property for himself, good. What's the definition of a small amount of property? So listen to this. Rabbi Huda says the name of Rav. Karka k'dei parnasaso. This is interesting. If the Shchimira retains a large enough parcel of land that he could support himself from it. So we'll say, if he goes ahead and he retains a large enough parcel of land that could generate enough support to take care of him, that shows that what? That he's hedging his bets a little bit. Meaning, he's on his deathbed, but it's good. He's an optimist also. So what does he do? He gives away everything, except he keeps a small parcel of land for himself, through which he could support himself if necessary. Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amar, Metatlan Kadei Parnasasum. It was Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba says that, by the way, this is not just with Karka, this is even true if he retained some type of metalkalin for himself as well. Otherwise, if he retained movable property for himself that would allow him ultimately to support himself in the event that he went ahead and recovered. So that shows that this is not a matna shchimira. This is just stam again. So we'll say, it's interesting, because now what we're defining as kol shehu is, he is retaining for himself enough of a significant gift that should he recover, he will have parnasa. Interesting. So again, less than that amount would still be apparently gezera matna shchemira. So what I said, the novelty over here is that Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba is coming along and saying that this is not just a din in karka, but this applies equally as well with metaltalin as well. So Amar Rabbi Zeira, kama mechuvan shmaisesa desabi. So Rabbi Zeira makes an interesting statement. He says, oh, look how beautiful and precise the statements of our elders are. Now, we'll say now what exactly that statement means. We're going to have to discuss. Karka taimamai. So I'll say ultimately again, why is it? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, karka taimamai, di'i koi samich alei. So we'll say, so why is it that ultimately again, if he retains some property for himself, that ultimately that no longer makes it a matna shchemira? Because what he's saying is, he's making a declarative statement, by retaining enough property in order to support himself, he's making the declarative statement that there's the possibility that he will recover. Once he's making that statement, then ultimately this is no longer a matna shchemira. Metaltalin nami ikoi samech alayhu. He's simply with metaltalin. When he withholds metaltalin for himself, Rabbi Osei, the statement that he's making is, I'm taking into account the possibility that I will recover, and therefore retaining for myself enough assets to support myself in the event that I indeed recover from this illness. Once a person has that mindset, then by definition, their other property disbursements now are no longer called a matna shchimira, rather they're just called stam imatono, and therefore even if the shchimira recovers, those matanos will still stand. Fine. So far, the takeaway message is the following. That halacha l'maisa, if the shchimira retains for himself enough property to provide him with parnasa in the event that he recovers, whether that is real property, karka, or it's metalton movable property, then his other disbursements can no longer be categorized as a matna shchivmira, rather just as a stam matana, and therefore even if he recovers, those matanos stand. Fine. Says in Maskar Rav Yosef. So we'll say, now we're going to go back for just a moment. Rav Yosef says, Umay my kavanasa mando amar metaltalin. So Rabbi says, I'm sorry. So Rabbi Yossi says, Umay Kavanasa. So let's go back for just a moment. So remember again, you had Rabbi Zeira saying, Kama Muchuvan Shmaisisa Stesabi. Look how precise the statements of our elders are. Rav Yosef comes along and says, excuse me, what precision is there in the statements of Rav Yehuda and Rav Yirmiya? How so? Mandar metaltalin, because it was Rav Yirmiya bar Abba who said that even if the Shechimera withholds metaltalin, and he withholds enough metaltalin to give him parnasa if he recovers, then it's no longer called the Matna Shechimera. How is that so? Karkatan. The Mishnah explicitly says that the Shechimera is withholding karka, right? So remember again, the Mishnah, when it discusses the idea of a Shechimera not divesting himself of his entire estate, but holding on to something, the something that the Mishnah identifies is karka, not metaltalin. So how can you say that? How can you say that Rabbi Yom Rabbi Abba is being precise when he says, even if the Shechimera withholds metaltalin, when the Mishnah is not discussing metaltalin? Second of all, mandu amar kidei parnasaso kol shutan. We'll say furthermore again, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yirmiya, who say, but this is really more kashan Rabbi Yehuda, who says karka kidei parnasaso, that once the Shechimera withholds enough property to provide him with parnasa, it is no longer a matna Shechimera. Where does Rabbi Yehuda get that? That's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says karka kol shehu. If the Shechimera retains any amount of property, even if we'll say if it's not enough to provide him with parnasa, it's no longer categorized ultimately again as a matna Shechimera, rather just as a regular matana. So we'll say the point that Rabbi Yosef is asking is, Rabbi Zeira, you are extolling the precision of these statements, but these statements are highly imprecise. Rabbi Yirmiya is introducing that this concept applies to metaltalin. Meanwhile, the Mishnah only spoke about karka. Rabbi Yehuda says that he has to withhold the amount of karka that would provide him with parnasa. Meanwhile, the Mishnah says karka kol shu. So what's happening over here? So says the Gemara. Amar le'Abaye. So we're going to answer both of these questions. Amar le'Abaye. V'chol heicha d'tani karka, karka dafka. So we'll say, Rav Yosef's kasha on Rabbi Yirmiya is that the Mishnah says karka, right? The Mishnah says that if a shechimera withholds karka, doesn't dispense all of his karka, withholds some of the karka for himself, that's no longer a matter of shechimera, that's a regular gift. So asks the Gemara, are you telling me that every single time it says karka in the Mishnah, does karka only mean karka? Or could karka be a more generic statement for what? For property. So it says the Gemara, Amar le'Abaye v'chol heicha, d'tani karka, karka dafka? Are you telling me that any time that the Mishnah says karka only means karka? What about the fine? V'hotran, both say, so listen to this. We're going to quote now from a Mishnah in Peah. Hakosev kol nechasav la'avdo. So we've seen this case actually a number of times in the past. A person goes ahead and writes all of his property to his eved. In other words, we'll say in this case, I own an eved, and I convey all of my property to my eved. What's the halacha? Yatza ben chorin. The eved goes see. Because we'll say, understood, included in that property is what? Is the eved. So by giving the eved the property, what I'm doing two things. Number one, I'm giving him his emancipation. That's number one. Number two, I'm conveying to him the property of my estate. So Hakosev kol nechasav la'avdo yotza ben chorin. Shi'er karka kol shehu. I will say, what happens again if I withhold some land for myself? Shi'er karka kol shehu lo yotza ben chorin. We'll say, in that case, he does not go free. Now look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Shi'er karka kol shehu, keep going. Shomer chutz mi karka kol shehu lo yotza ben chorin. So we'll say, if I go ahead and I say, Eved, I'm hereby giving you all of my property, my entire estate, except for karka kol shehu. Literally, except for a small amount of land. Lo yotza ben chorin. In that case, the Eved does not go free. I'm reading the rest of the Rashbam. Sha Eved hukush lakar kol, stiksev v'stachaltem. V'hai karka kol shehu ikka l'mimar, shala Eved hu omer, v'mim tzashena ben chorin, v'gam enachasim lo kona. So we'll say, listen to this. So the idea over here is that if I say to the Eved, I'm giving you my entire estate except for some karka. We'll say, an Eved is considered to be halachically karka. Therefore, what? It's possible that the part that I'm retaining is what? Is the Eved himself. Therefore, he doesn't go free, and of course, he doesn't acquire the estate. Now that Rashbam, by the way, gives you, this is actually a little bit of a teaser, but I'll give it to you. Look at this. V'hu adin, im amr chutz mi metaltlin kol shu, ki nefar shu alazal ha-kamei, shasam metaltlin shira, etzal evad, dilma hai evad, hu metaltlin. So we're going to see The same is true if the owner withheld metaltalin. Because as much as we say that an eved is like karka, an eved is also like metaltalin. We learned this before. Why? Because at the end of the day, an eved is not fixed in place. So because he's not fixed in place, he has the status as metaltalin as well. But we're not up to that yet. So look at the Gemara. So we'll say, so therefore, case number one is I write my entire estate to my eved. If that happens, eved goes free and acquires the estate. Case number two, shir karka kol shu. Eved, I hereby convey my entire estate to you, except for some karka. In that case, Rabbi Osai, lo yotze ben chorin. He doesn't go free, nor does he acquire. Why? Because at the end of the day, the concern is, the little bit of karka that I retain is in fact the eved. Therefore, he doesn't go free, and therefore doesn't acquire. Watch this. Reb Shimon says, no. The olam hu ben chorin, ad sheyomar kol nechasai nesunin leploni avdi, chutz mi'echad miribo shebahem. So let's listen to this. Comes along Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon says, if you go ahead and you give your property over to your Eved, the Eved always goes free. The only thing that prevents the Eved from going free is if you say, I hereby give my property over to my Eved, chutz mi'echad miribo shebahem. Except, you know, for whatever it is, 1/200th of the estate, right? So some percentage of the estate. So what's the pshat? Take a look at the Rashbam. Reb Shimon over the olam hu ben chorin im shir karka kol shu the shir karka velo avad velo eved ad shi yashir shashir sasim v'yomar kol nochasay nesun leploni abdi chutz me'echa mirvo shebahen shu echa mirvo a eved koi ve'inu meshuchrar. So v'derech kavad kasav la'adokach u'mikomokom lo'karnakom. So let's listen to this. Reb Shimon holds that if you just say shir karka kolshu, we'll say ultimately again, so then that we assume that that's not referring to the eved. The only time we assume that what you are withholding potentially refers to the eved is when you leave behind some percentage of the estate. So if you say to the eved, I hereby convey to you my estate except for some percentage, in that case we are concerned that ultimately again that percentage really represents the eved himself. The Rashbam says because this is a meaning to say that I'm withholding karka kol shehu, that's not derech kavod. Ultimately, again, a person gives his eved kavod as well. Therefore, it's only if he says I'm withholding some percentage of the estate that we are concerned that that percentage is the eved. Therefore, the eved doesn't acquire. Top of kuf nun. So these are all the various cases. Now, the obvious kasha bosai is what? So what about this is all where the Adon is saying, Eved, I'm hereby conveying my estate to you, but I'm withholding some karka. So what we see over here is, depending on the formulation, if he withholds some karka, then what? Then what? Then the Eved does not go free, and by extension, the Eved does not acquire. Because we're concerned that the part of the karka that the Adon is retaining for himself is in fact the Eved. What happens, however, if the Adon doesn't retain karka, but he retains metaltalin? What happens then? V'amar Rav Dimi bar Yosef, Amar Rav Elazar, asu metaltalin shir eitzel eved. Wow. So says Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar says Rav Elazar, the halacha is the same if the Adon kept metaltalin. In other words, that if the Adon went ahead and said what, Rav Elazar? If the Adon said that metaltalin, I hereby eved, I'm conveying to you the entire estate, except for certain metaltalin, that Rabbi Elazar would say, that would also be a problem. That it's possible that we would say that halacha lemaisa, the eved does not go free, the eved doesn't acquire the estate, because maybe the metaltalin that the Adon is withholding for himself includes what? Includes what? Includes the eved. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Amar Rav Dimi, Amar Rav Elazar, asu, afag avdik pani shir karka kol shu lo yotze ben chorin. Even though, again, the lashon of the Mishnah was that if the Adon retains some karka, so the eved doesn't go free. Hu adin im shir metaltlin kol shu. The avd. So we'll say this would be true. Rav Elazar says that even if the Adon retained metaltalin, so even if the Adon said, Eved, I hereby give you my entire estate except for some metaltalin, at least according to some means, we would say the Eved does not go free, the Eved does not acquire the property. Why? Because maybe included in the metaltalin that the Adon is withholding for himself is the Eved. Look at the Rashbam. So he says, Shu avda, third line in, Shu avda nami ki metaltali dami. Because Rav Elazar, even though we always spend our halachic lives, our Talmudic lives, saying that the Eved is like karka, guess what? An Eved is also like metaltalin. Why? Shari eno mechuber lekarka. Rabbah said, you know why an Eved is like metaltalin? Because an Eved is not mechumer. Because an Eved is not touching on it. Because an Eved literally is movable. V'karulei b'nei adam metaltali. It's all Eved and Eved is called metaltalin. Alma. Afagav diktani karka. Lav dafka. Elahu adin lemetaltalin. Umas nisnai metaltali k'dei panasasu k'mekarkai k'dei panasasu. So what do you see from here? Jose, even though, again, the Mishnah in Peah says that we're talking about karka, but you see about this comes along and says, it's not just karka, it's even metaltalin. But we'll say, therefore, what do you see from here? You see from here that sometimes when the Mishnah says karka, karka doesn't just mean what? Karka doesn't just mean karka. Karka could also mean metaltalin. Therefore, I will say, bringing this back to our Mishnah, we're still in the middle of a thought, but bringing this back to our Mishnah, therefore, it's quite possible that even though the Mishnah said that if a shchiv mira retains some karka for himself, it is no longer a matna shchiv mira. Rather what? It is a regular matana. It's possible that karka doesn't just mean karka. Karka also means metaltalin, as we have just demonstrated according to Rabbi Elazar by the case of the Ev. So we'll stop over here for today. We are stopping like a little bit mid-thought, but we'll pick up, but at least again, you got the raya that karka doesn't just have to mean karka. Karka means metaltalin. We'll continue with the rest of the thought of Miratz Hashem tomorrow. Good morning.